This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and enter the code FILMSACK.
It all began a very long time ago when a merchant ship was set upon by pirates of the same brotherhood. A small boy watched helplessly as his father was killed by the pirate leader, the evil Cabai Seng. He jumped overboard and was washed ashore on a mysterious jungle island called Bengala. It seemed like a case of out of the frying pan and into the fire, but the Tuganda tribesmen meant the boy no harm. They scooped him up and carried him to their village. And that night, in an ancient ceremony of fire and drums, the tribal shaman presented the boy with a ring of great significance.
You're not immortal. I know your secrets, Phantom. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 290. That's 290. I already said I'm Scott Johnson. Hi. Joining me today, Brian. He's one of the rope people, Dunaway.
Okay. Oh, hey. Dearest Mr. Zane. Oh, I'm writing a letter, by the way.
Oh.
I know you were recently injured, but please put on a shirt. You were making my man boobs sad. Yours sincerely, every guy. Everywhere. P.S. Hero ate my sandwich.
Wow.
Jerk.
Very well said. Also with us, Randy, always trust a purple man on a horse with a pet wolf named Devil, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Mm-hmm. Randy.
So this week I got so bored and I was zoning out while watching the movie. And I mean, I was zoning out hard. Like, I was Googling other things. So I decided I'm going to make a list of all the things that I searched and learned about while ignoring this movie that was playing on my television.
All right.
Okay, so here's what I Googled. How to make your own pizza dough at home. It's surprisingly easy. The name of that crazy jerk who started the Lululemon tights company, because I wondered if he's still running the company and still being a crazy jerk about it.
I don't even know what that is, but okay, keep going.
How does the economics of library late fees work?
Okay.
It's fascinating. sidewalk chalk. It's just chalk, right?
Yeah.
The
for
lyrics.
The sidewalk.
I Googled the lyrics for some Bruce Springsteen song, but I couldn't figure it out.
All right.
And finally, what color is the flame if you burn chocolate?
Oh.
Mm, you know, I want to know that last one. Did you bring results?
Just watch The Phantom
and then
have an iPad.
Genuinely interested in every weird little offshoot thing you mentioned today. Like, that all sounds super interesting to me. Also, and finally with us, Brian, how many times are we going to have lame airplane stunts, Ibbit?
I'm checking my Google search history actually right now as well. Oh, yeah, all I have is, did Christy Swanson ever work after this movie? This movie is a big stinking pile of crapola, which, here you go, begins and ends with the letter A. So if your horse is that fast, maybe you should just take the horse instead of the plane.
Yes. Yeah, man.
That's perfect because he mentioned the plane, mm-hmm. He called you the name,
yep.
And then you said things about the plane.
Yeah.
Right.
I was on the fly thinking there.
That was pretty good.
It was just coincidental.
That This is the movie. It's the Phantom, it's called. Directed by Simon Wincer. Okay. I want to call him Winker because it sounds like a wanker.
It was a wanker of a direction.
Who winces.
Did we remind me which of the Crocodile Dundee movies we saw? Was it in L.A.? Was that the one? Or was it the
second one?
It was
one.
The second
New York.
One.
Which, okay.
Whichever that is.
New York. The New York one. New York. Okay. The L.A. one was directed by the same Simon Wincer. So there's a pedigree there. He also directed Quigley Down Under.
I forgot about Quigley.
He's into like Australian like Indiana Jones archetypes. Well,
that's because he's Australian.
He's well, Australian. I understand that, but but so much of his work, including
he's really into that Australian stuff.
Right.
Including what's episodes, he did some episodes of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles as well. Like
yes, which we felt here.
He is
much.
So into that whole Indiana Jones thing. Like wow. Everything about this movie, well, most of it, a lot of it anyway. The first 5 minutes are all about like three different Indiana Joneses trying to find a skull.
Let's. I actually want to. Since you brought it up, I really want to get out a basic description of that entire genre. Like, okay. What makes it Indiana Jones?
It's right. Easy. Like, it's a serial adventure.
Right.
So that means that's pretty much it. Any type of serial adventure has pretty much been overshadowed in our generation.
Yeah, but who was the guy before this that was famous? When Lucas
Alan Quartermain?
Yes, Alan Quartermain is your chief inspiration.
Okay, so there are these little elements though that I think are so important, and you see them and go, "Oh wow, we're dead center in this trope." Like guys in a jungle wearing fedoras, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have to wear a fedora in the jungle, apparently.
Yeah, and it needs to be the 30s or the 40s. It needs to be that era.
Right, typically right. 30s, 40s period piece.
When the discovery of things was still happening, because nowadays there's really not much out there anymore. Like everything's been put into Wikipedia, right?
Yeah. Every once in a while you find, you know, you get a thing where someone will say somebody in the Arizona desert dug up a dinosaur we'd never seen before. And that's about the extent of it. Like you don't get these big, like a tomb of ancient men was found today. Like we're done with that, I think.
So would you not say that, was it the Jewel of the Nile? What was the first one? Romancing the Stone.
Oh, that was, mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Cause that doesn't take place. That's not a period piece, right? That took place in modern times. Would you not describe that as an Indiana Jones-esque?
I would not because it's missing its fedora. Mm. Quite
didn't he have one?
I
thought he had
place one. In the jungle, right?
Yeah, but I thought he had a fedora. Yeah. Didn't he wear a hat like that? Maybe he didn't. Maybe I don't remember. Okay. Well, wait, is it even a fedora?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What am I thinking 100%. Of a fedora? I'm thinking of a fedora as like a businessman hat from the 40s where it's like a small and short cropped hat. Not like a big.
It can be that too.
It can be that. Those are okay. So it's a broad definition of fedora.
I'm like fine with that. Rimmed, a hat of you know, with a brim that goes all the way around.
So
I don't know,
the fedora part is like a little bum shape at the top, like the little dip.
That could be the
thousands
requirement.
Thousands of people are right now googling hats.
Yeah, thousands of people are yelling at us right now.
Tropes have this sort of broad quality to them. Mm. So for example, we could probably find a Western Indiana Jones movie, right? Where the hero wears a cowboy hat. That's fine.
Probably. Yeah.
The hat though matters. The fact that he's out, you know, in the 1930s with a whip, right? Whips are for some reason really, really useful when you're adventuring.
Whips, a pistol that's usually like World War II era looking German.
Blocky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like one of those.
And
Rugers.
And I think the other thing I would add to our rubric here is tribes of odd people.
Yeah. Rope people are my favorite because they actually called them the rope people in the movie.
Don't you feel like this subgenre we're defining requires that? So you're going to run into a bunch of people with white paint on their face eventually.
Yeah, you need a bunch of them who think they're worshiping a deal, but they're really working covertly for the French guy. And the French guy, when he sees Indiana Jones run with all his cobwebs on him, goes, and that somehow means chase after him and throw spears. Mm-hmm. Right? Like,
at least in Indiana Jones, it was very...
rope people.
Right. The director of the action was just, you know, by showing little motions and stuff. This guy was totally like, run faster.
Yeah.
The guy who played the agent in Too Fast, Too Furious, which you pointed out before.
Yeah, James Remar.
What's his
name?
What's his name's dad? What's his name from the show on Showtime? He killed people, but he was more like a superhero than
Dexter.
Dexter's dad,
Dexter.
Yeah.
Why am I thinking that wasn't James Remar in Sphere too? Like, haven't we had...
What?
I don't think he's...
Oh, no. I'm thinking of Peter Coyote.
Oh, yeah, you're thinking of Peter Coyote.
Yeah. I feel like we've seen a lot of James Remar lately, and it wasn't just Fast and the Furious.
It was Warriors first. I think it's the first time we ever got a taste of him. And then I'll bet, supposedly, by the way, MostSack.com is getting a big revamp, like a big uptake changed stuff. Wow. He was telling me, and so I'm excited about that. But we could probably look him up and see how often we get him. But it feels like a lot for some reason.
It does, yeah.
I will say this is probably my favorite of his performances, though.
No, I enjoyed him.
Even though it was a little, over the top. It was one of the little.
I just like that he gets to wear that belt the whole movie.
Yeah. Yes. Everything in this movie, by the way, when Phantom, Purple Phantom, was trying to get his belt back, it looked like he was going straight to his crotch, and I could not. Yes. I forgot he had a belt on, and I was like, what are you doing, dude? What is the
I really, I really genuinely thought he was trying to give a hand job. I really did. I was confused.
The great purple hand job of 1941. Anyway, so this is a thing
Scott Fletcher has to say. Of this movie.
Yeah, he has words of wisdom about it, and actually a bonus track, which I cannot wait to play for you guys. So here, first of all, is Scott Fletcher explaining more about the Phantom.
The Phantom in 1930s.
1930.
New York City. The purple-clad Phantom's longtime effort to crush a culture of evil pits him against megalomaniacal villain Xander Drax.
Okay, there's your now. Keep that.
Oh, that's it.
That's it.
That ended quickly.
It's a short one, but now here is him trying to get through that in an earlier take or many earlier takes. So enjoy this. This is great.
Pits him against megalomaniacal. Pits him against Pits him against megalomaniacal. Pits him against megalomaniacal's villain.
Hello, film factors.
This isn't supposed to play yet.
So it goes to show you some things that are written shouldn't be spoken.
Yep, you're not
and
wrong.
That's one of them.
That's one of those words. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so what I was going
to say. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was really great. What was I going to say, though? I was going to say something about. This. Okay, so I saw it in the movie theater. I saw it in 96 in a theater. Yeah, with my wife at the time. We were only married a couple of years. And I think maybe my sleeping youngest daughter or oldest daughter, who is now 21, who was just like a year old or whatever. Anyway,
this is very much a family movie.
Yes. Okay. It is and it isn't. Like, it's supposed to be this over-the-top send up of this same kind of era of filmmaking, like this kind of swashbuckling
serial.
Yeah, it's meant to be very.
Wait a minute. Are you going to claim satire? I don't know if I can take it if you're going to claim satire.
Oh, no. Here's what I'm going to say. I claim that they tried to mimic that, and I think it failed. Now,
earlier treatments of this film was more satire.
That wouldn't surprise me, but what I guess what I'm getting at is it was clear to me when they would have these scenes of there's that dude from the Sopranos, super dick in Sopranos, by the way, that guy, where he got hit with the cannonball and flown across the cave, which was pretty great. There are lots of moments where it's like, listen here, see, you want me? I should rub him out. Like, it's a lot of like nods to an era that doesn't exist anymore, and it's been done 1,000 times in 1,000 other movies, way better than it's done here. It came off as cheap and amateuristic in this movie, but yes. I think what they were aiming for was trying to recreate that kind of like Hudsucker Proxy, not parody, direct parody, but more like an homage, exactly.
That era.
Yeah, and make it feel not like they're making fun of it, but trying to make it seem like, yeah, remember those? Ha, here we go. Let's go, buddy.
I don't think you homage other things with an existing longtime property. That's my problem, is that the Phantom is a comic that's been around since my great grandfather's day.
Yeah. Like in the 30s.
He was
the first.
You know what I mean? So you don't take that as a property and then say, we're going to, make an homage to all sorts of different things. No, I hope you try to stay faithful to some aspect of that existing.
Well, the comic property. The comics were very much like that, though. They were like, gumshoe style girl in distress, swashbuckly bullshit. Like that was kind of their thing. So in a way it's like trying to stay true to it, but then also from a cinematic standpoint, tell that story the way movies used to kind of tell these stories. I got the impression that's what they were doing.
I argue that I don't think you could do it without having some sort of that campy send up kind of feel to it.
Yeah, and I get that. I totally get that. But it's like Scott said, it's amateurish. It's made badly. Yeah. Is actually what I like. There are so many times when like, how was that the best take? How did a professional director not ask Billy Zane to get the inflection right on the statement that he just, you know, made?
Really? Like, I might have to be, is maybe Team Ibbot this week. I'm not sure how, where you stand, but it sounds like to me, this is probably the reason why this movie failed financially in its initial offering is the fact
or that any offering, there's been no subsequent offering.
Right. Well, the material, the material that they had, the source material they had, it would be really hard to bring that into a modern sensibility, especially if you try to be faithful to the original. And they were being the director Winsor was a fan of the Phantom, as well as many people who worked on this, and so they wanted to bring a very faithful interpretation of the Phantom, and that just doesn't play really well with audiences almost 70 something years later. And so I think trying to be faithful in this instance really hurt them, and I don't think it was an amateurish attempt. I think this filmmaking to me was amazing. The visuals of this movie was amazing. The stunts in this movie, amazing.
Oh, I don't know about all that.
You have me genuinely looking to make sure that I watched the right movie. Like,
well, you already admitted to not watching the movie. You Googled stuff the entire time on your iPad. So,
I know,
I mean,
because
easy.
It was so bad. It was so bad. Like, did I accidentally watch the, you know, the other Phantom, the TV Phantom that was on TBS,
the sci-fi.
Yeah, was it the 94 Fantastic Four, or was it
Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Yeah,
oh, there's a lot of Z's in this film.
There's a lot of them. So okay, here's the thing though.
Came from me while I was watching it.
In 96, I don't have a memory of in 96, which is now 20 years ago. I do not have a memory of watching the movie and coming out going, that was terrible. I honestly don't remember a thing about it. In fact, when this started up, I'm like, oh, we're in the 30s. Oh, we're in the jungle. Like, I don't remember any of this. I just remember purple suit and doing stuff. And that's it. I mean, I don't remember anything else. Like, that's it. So,
Did you come in late to the movie, Scott?
Because you would have missed the come in late.
Yeah, because everybody, apparently they thought everybody would come in late to this movie.
Oh,
now, that
right.
That was actually also a nod to the introduction to the series. Yeah, so that was, but yeah, I thought the same thing too. I was like, what? Because I didn't realize that. And I went back and
it's a little weird. But anyway, yeah. It's just not well made. Like, it's just kind of crabby. What? I know. Yeah,
I don't see that at all. I mean, what,
you're
y'all talking about?
Done away.
Are y'all talking about? Production value? Or are you talking about?
I'm talking about direction. Direction. So everything. How did the camera end up being in this spot where I don't feel like I'm getting the best shot? How in the world did they? Was that so many times I heard a character say something, and I asked, how was that the best take? How could they have not stopped and said, okay, now this time, put the inflection on the word incredible, because it's the word incredible. And you'll find, you'll find that if you push that word, you make a sound that sounds more like how someone would actually speak. Everyone comes across like,
did you watch any movies during the 90s? Batman?
Yes, and for example, this movie, I didn't see this movie in the theaters, obviously, but I have it related to the time frame of Shawshank Redemption.
Mm-hmm. God, yeah. Well, yeah, if you compare it to the Shawshank Redemption, come on.
But I'm going to say,
it's not a fair comparison, but I will look, it's not, I won't even say it's about direction. For me, the problem with the movie is just freaking is movie. Like, it's just not a good movie by any standards. If it had been, it would have done okay. Like, it did
it
terribly.
Done okay. It's done okay on the video and DVD. It's even had a Blu-ray released.
Yeah, but does that mean it did done, okay, or does that just mean they've got to try to get their money back?
You have a Blu-ray release.
You got to look at the, okay. Let's put this film where it belongs, which is
next to Battlefield Earth. No,
the budget wasn't in comparison to a lot of the other big movies during the time.
Mm-hmm. This is true. It's very clear that they had to pull a bunch of tricks to do what they did. Mm-hmm.
And I think with what they had, and also you got to remember, Well, you may not know this, but if this movie had a legacy from like the 80s of trying to be made and passing through different directors, and you'll probably notice that Dante was executive director or producer on this film as well, because he had a hand in it at one point in time. So when it finally landed in Winsor's hands, it already been shopped around in Hollywood for a really long time.
Who's Dante? And Dante who?
Joe Dante.
Oh, Joe Dante, the director, Joe Dante. Producer guy. Got it. Okay.
Your mama.
And, so, Dante of Dante's Peak? Like, which Dante are we talking about? Okay.
Right. But this movie had been shopped around a really long time. And so when it finally landed in Winsor's hands, he was like, okay, what do we need to do here? And he had a short shooting schedule. He had a limited budget. I think Billy Zane, I think that what he brought to the character was real genuine to the comics.
Maybe.
To me.
Maybe. Mm. I mean,
and I feel like Treat Williams, oh my God, he was.
He was great. I will give you that.
He knocked it out of the park.
He cheesed it up real good. I enjoyed his cheese. He was great.
It seems like it's so easy to play a bad guy, though. You know, I mean, just over the top and it's incredible.
Yeah,
you know,
it's incredible. Yeah. But his enthusiasm.
He's a good example of how a script can misunderstand what it's doing with a character. Mm. Like, he starts out a freaking maniac, like an absolute terror. Mm-hmm. He pulls one of the most evil ways to murder a person ever.
The
microscope.
Yeah, that was rough.
I can't see anything with these springs and blades in the way.
He didn't murder him, right? He just blinded him. Well, yeah. My understanding was the last thing that he would ever see again.
That guy's a chick in the bucket, so we don't know where he ended up. But he
was still screaming.
In theory, it just blinded him. I mean, he would have poked his eyes out, and unless
you don't need these anymore. He breaks his glasses. That to me implies that you will live longer. You will not be able to see longer, but you will just crack.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yeah.
Giving the script a lot of credit. He's in that scene. He is an ultra villain, like personally, glorifying another human. But then later on, he's like, you know, dancing around. He's a, you know what I mean? Like the script just cannot decide
he threw a spear into the back of that other character actor, mobster guy, as he was trying to leave the boardroom, which was pretty cool. On the whole, though, and I've always liked that guy. I like Treat Williams. I think he has a great name, first of all. I just want to have a guy named Treat. But he's just chewing it up. And that's maybe the highlight of the movie for me. Nothing else in the movie really rose to the point of me at least smiling or anything. And he at least had me kind of grinning at a couple of points.
The highlight of the film for me was the very beginning, because it started out pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, it started out with, oh, we're in the jungle and we have a bridge. And the instant you saw that bridge and realized that it was old and rickety, you immediately think that thing's coming down at some point in this movie.
Oh yeah,
that thing's coming down.
I didn't see them making the kid drive across, and so that was a twist.
That is really good, actually. I do like that. Like, who's gonna drive it? And then you see the kid.
Yeah, the abuse of the native kid is one of my. One of the things in this movie was just like really striking. Like, there's a point, and I vined it for the world to see, but there's a point where he's irritated with the kid in the cab of the truck and goes to elbow him in the head. It's like, holy shit, dude. So calm down there, buddy.
What does it say about everyone else in the film that my favorite thing, the thing that made me feel entertained the most, was the opening scene with James Remar only and, you know, some henchmen. And later on, everything with Billy Zane in it, I'm rolling my eyes. Especially everything with Catherine Zeta-Jones, I'm rolling my eyes. Oh my God!
Yeah,
this is Catherine Zeta-Jones' first big role, right?
Yeah, I think so. If you want to count it as a big role, wasn't her big role. Her biggest thing was what, like Zorro? Like, what else happened there? I can't think of anything else with her right now.
Like her biggest,
place, like the place where she got going
when she first got. Oh. It was in that movie with Sean Connery where she shows her
Entrapment. Like,
Entrapment.
Yeah. Oh, Entrapment. I forgot about that. Show me your boobs. I don't know.
that was about 3 years later. After this.
Okay. She's a lovely lady, man. Mm-hmm. So pretty. But her role in this is terrible. It's terrible.
It's terrible. Like, I will never understand why when she and Billy Zane and what's her name, Christy Swanson, all come together for the first time in the second act, in the second scene, rather. Why in the world she and the Phantom kiss each other and he's totally into it. And then he tells Christy Swanson to tie her up. Mm. I will never understand that. That makes no sense to me.
Mm. The Phantom, he's very much channeling the Christopher Reeves school of acting Superman in this movie. And that would be kind of something you would see. He would let that moment play out.
There's another thing I didn't get. What the hell? They end up at the Daily Planet and there's literally a Jimmy Olsen named Jimmy?
Hey, what was that called? There's a lot of crossover.
What was that called? The New York...
It was the World Globe.
Oh, the World Globe or some BS name.
There was literally a Jimmy Olsen hitting on Lois Lane in that scene.
Yeah. Look, Superman stole his stick from the Phantom. It was only fair for the Phantom to get back.
He stole his stick.
Stole his shtick.
Shtick. Now combine those two words.
Right. His stick.
I like the idea that he had a stick. Yeah. No. Look. All right. So let's back this truck up. It's fine. The movie is... I was bored. The entire time I was bored. Yes. I really had a hard time. And it's not.
And it felt like most of the actors were as well.
Yeah. And by the way, Billy Zane, so much cooler now, dude. Like if you see him, what's that Mad Dogs show that's on Amazon? Hit that first. Pilot. He is. I don't know what happens with him later. Don't tell me because I haven't caught up. But he's so cool now. Like there's something about Billy Zane now. He's like 6 foot million. He's like super buff still. He's bald and just a badass. Like, he's super cool now. If you go look at pictures of Billy Zane today, he's just a bad mother scratcher.
Someone out there get to work on a movie where Billy Zane and Drake play the same character 20 years apart. They're seriously.
What if the only way you could time travel between them was, say, I used to call me on your cell phone and then you transfer. No, that's weird. I never thought about that.
There is a commonality there for sure.
Like white guy Drake. But anyway, but back in this this portion of his career, because this is also 96 is either the year or dang close to when Titanic came out, right? So this would have been
I guess 1 year later.
Wow. Yeah, 97.
So Titanic was in 97. Yeah.
So he's at this point of his career where he's kind of this sassy, I don't know, it's like this irritated maitre d' kind of vibe I get from him from everything he did then. Watch him now. He is the essence of cool. I don't know what happens. Yeah. He just aged right, or that's just his prime. And nobody seems to care now. Nobody talks about Billy Zane now. He deserves more in 2016 is all I'm getting at.
Right.
They were in the actual Hugh Hefner mansion when they were at the Palmer Mansion. That is the Hugh Hefner mansion. That's pretty great.
Everything so wasn't sticky. See,
yeah, what, right, where the Purell
right, walking?
They have Purell dispensers at every door. And,
you think, right?
And then
when they walk, their shoes make us.
Now here's how I just expressed how I like Billy Zane. Okay, so yeah, now I'm going to say what would have fixed this. There was some trivia floating around, and it appears to be corroborated that Bruce Campbell auditioned for the role and was the runner up and almost got the role. Now I think I would have enjoyed this more had it been Bruce Campbell. In 1996.
Right. And that was when it was going to be much more
satire. I think if it was Bruce Campbell, this would have been Rocketeer.
Yeah, it could have been.
But that sounds like the kind of rumor/trivia that goes on with every movie. Was Sylvester Stallone also listed?
Schwarzenegger.
This is actually true. This is something that was well known at the time. This isn't something that was added on later.
Yeah, I found some other stuff. Some other links that point to other things, because I was having the same. I never trust that stuff on IMDb. It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mel Gibson.
Now there's a documentary about this a little bit that kind of goes in a little deeper into the Lee Falk character, the Phantom, and also the movie and stuff.
Really? Oh, I'd like to see that actually.
Dolph Lundgren. Dolph Lundgren was apparently considered, like, genuinely considered.
Yeah, which it was about a decade earlier, though, because they were like
fascinating.
They were into it. They were going to make this in like 86, 87, and Lundgren, like, was their first pick, and then it got delayed, and then didn't happen.
Imagine if in the 80s it had been made by, like, Joel Schumacher, and Dolph Lundgren was the Phantom, and he basically didn't have any speaking lines. Like, he was a silent Phantom. I think
that would be cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'd watch that. It's funny you should say Joel.
We can't.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say
he mentioned Joel Schumacher, and he was supposed to direct this at one point. So there's a lot of people that were supposedly hanging around this project forever, and it just got in development hell, like Dunaway indicated earlier, and it just never happened.
And you said Dolph Lundgren, and that makes me think about the straight-to-Netflix video Kindergarten Cop 2.
That's what I think of every time I hear the name Dolph Lundgren. So has nobody's seen that, I assume. I wonder if we ought to try it. That ought to be like a raw film sack. First time kind of thing.
Commentary. Watch it with us for the first time, kind of thing.
Yeah, either just watch it new and then come back and do a regular episode. But one way or the other, make it our first, like, direct to DVD, no one's seen it yet kind of experience. Anyway, what Randy you were saying?
I wanted to touch back on Titanic a moment, because in addition to Billy Zane and Catherine Zeta-Jones being in Titanic, it's kind of in the same time frame.
Wait, she wasn't in Titanic. She was in another Titanic. She was in some other show, like a miniseries.
Yeah.
So she wasn't in the Titanic movie.
She wasn't.
No.
Okay.
But it's easy to confuse, because she was in this similar thing in the same, like, a year before. Like, this same year.
They had a boat in it.
Yeah. No, in 96.
After watching The Phantom, you think that, that she's on a sinking ship, but it really is just called The Phantom.
And is there any explaining her character's about face in this movie?
No.
Well, there is and there isn't. There is a bit of a trope, an understanding that us girls stick together. So she's not really loyal to.
No, but she was doing good cop, bad cop when she did that, when she said that.
She's not loyal to any cause except the womanly cause.
I think she's loyal to whatever crappy plot twist they threw into. Like, she just. It's like she just stopped. Like, I'm evil. I'm a good guy now.
And I think Randy nailed it. I think it's that we women need to stick together. I think that was them inserting a line so that they could explain why she has such an about face.
Yeah.
Right.
Or she just saw the writing on the wall and thought, I think I better work with the purple guy.
She's a pirate, and pirates are opportunistic. So, I mean,
that's a good point.
They're going to be on the side.
That could have been stated. That could have been overt. Like, and you could say that about most things in the film that would have been character development. They could have been done with people actually saying, I've changed my mind or whatever. Like, so many times, someone runs off and James Remar says something ridiculous, like, "We're going after him." Of course, you're going after him. Why would you say that? No one would actually say that, right?
Ride fast, because we're chasing a plane.
Yeah,
that's basically what he says, ride fast. Well, duh. Yeah.
But then at other times when I could really use some explanation of why a character is doing what they're doing, there's nothing.
Okay, I got the best line I've ever read on IMDb, because it is the most obvious. This is literally like saying, it's like walking out of a lake and telling people you're wet. Okay, so here's the line. The movie was originally going to be the first of a trilogy. However, it bombed at the box office and the two sequels were canceled.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't want to shock anybody, but yeah, duh. Of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if they had polished it with some toothpaste, it would have been all right. Some Pepsodent.
Yeah.
That was so weird. That's another thing. Like, there's so many times in this movie where someone says something and you're like, oh, that's going to be of interest. Mm-hmm. No, we're just going to look at them funny and walk
that's
off
a
with
thread.
The skull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have two production things that you're going to hear. Well, one of them you're going to hear in the clips, and the other is just a visual thing, but that really bugged me. I'm going to do an impression of what most people's lines were delivered like in this movie. It's a volume thing. It's not a Netflix transfer thing. We always try to lay it at the feet of that. I don't think it's that. I think it's just the movie.
This is a really good Netflix transfer. This movie looked HD.
Okay, but I'm going to give two criticisms for that. One is, when people talk, they start loud and got real quiet. So they'd say things like,
"Right,
aha, we found the guy."
Yes.
And they trail off into nothing. And I've got some examples of that later. And then also, it was so dark, and I don't mean dark like tonally or story dark. I mean, like, it was dark everywhere.
Underlit.
Thank you. It was underlit.
Yeah.
And it was
anybody else have the subtitles on the entire movie?
No. I should have. I should have.
I'm so glad I did.
I just cranked it way up.
There were so many times when I was looking at the internet and I heard something stated. I heard someone.
Is this movie still on?
I heard someone say something and I was like, I have no idea what that character just said. And I would glance up at the screen and the words would still be there.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy cow. Yeah. They just said something that was really complicated and it was so low I couldn't catch it.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you only watched this one once.
Oh, dude. I only watched this movie. Time. 0.7 times.
So the exception to the rule. Okay, one. That's funny you bring all that up. I think maybe part of M. Dunaway, so this is a concession toward you. It's possible that I came away less happy with this movie because I did a weird thing. I watched the HBO documentary Citizen 4, which is all about Edward Snowden and NSA stuff, and it's super. That thing is a frightening damn documentary. And I watched that and then watched this. And you couldn't have two more completely different experiences, right? Like one is all about, oh my gosh, what are we doing? You know, whose governments are lying to who and why are we being surveilled and blah, blah, blah. All this like real life, scary, paranoid stuff. And then slide right into purple man on a horse saves the day. And so it doesn't have any kind of throughput. And so it's possible, given that it is a bad movie, that it was made worse because I watched that before I watched this. So I'm willing to admit that part of me may be tainted by this. It was like culture shock. It was like this weird, like sudden braking in a car where I switched gears and went, holy shit, this is nothing like. And all I could think about during the first fourth of the movie was, oh man, Edward Snowden locked up in that hotel.
It's a bit disturbing that a political documentary would be more high energy than a comic book hero movie.
Right.
Yeah. Like him quietly just sitting in a hotel room in Hong Kong, staring at a computer, waiting for an answer back from someone's encryption thing was more riveting than the entirety of The Phantom. Like, it's just, it's crazy. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because I think that can make a difference. It's also why sometimes I think we should question critics when they see, you know, 10 movies a day or whatever they do.
Oh, yeah.
And they just, how can they be?
Like Randy who
really
watches.
Bad.
Right.
Like Randy who watches Shawshank Redemption and then turns around and watches The Phantom and goes, this is no Shawshank Redemption. Crap.
I was watching it on another TV while I was watching The Phantom.
I was arguing against you trying to put it in a specific period. Like,
well, I was trying to say superhero movies during the 90s are not the superhero movies of today.
That's true.
That is for sure.
That is true.
Like The Shadow and this movie. And, you know, you can even go back to Dick Tracy and all those kind of films.
I totally agree.
There's another thing. And Scott Kurtz, if you're listening, I need you just to tune out for 1 minute. All right.
He won't. But go ahead.
There's another thing. And that is the hero sucks as a hero. And that is something that I only ever really apply to like Superman. When you are too good, when you're too destined to be successful, I don't like you. I can't like a hero who just like the Phantom's here now. Everything's gonna be just fine. You know?
Right.
And
well, he doesn't have any superhuman strength, but all he has is his.
He just has this destiny to succeed.
Destiny, yeah.
Just like Superman. And there's never been a good Superman movie. And I think it's because of the character. And it's not. And again, Scott Kurtz needs to. I'm sorry if he's listening. He's getting an aneurysm right now.
He likes those Donner movies. He's a big fan of those 70s, 80s Donner movies.
Well,
I'm sorry. He's a big fan of one and two.
But anyway, you reminded me of that because you brought up modern hero movies, and all modern hero movies, the hero is on the brink of failing at all times. Right. And if the Phantom never is, and that's it's kind of unfair.
They have to seem fallible. Right. There has to be a vulnerability. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The first archetypes, the first superheroes from the 30s and the 40s were infallible. That's kind of like, that's once again, I think that's the failing of this movie is trying to be too faithful to the source material, all the way down to having a horse and a wolf, which are just crammed in there for no particular reason.
That talk to
reason.
Each other? Oh my
right.
God.
Right.
Oh my God.
Oh, is he in a well?
Let's
is
go chase
well,
that
Jimmy?
Plane.
Now that annoyed me.
You stay here, devil. Take care of him, and I'm going to go
it's
to the
kind of only, a horse in a bucket.
If only they had stuck with that. I would have liked this movie so much more if it was about animals that could talk to each other and the subtitles had subtitled their communications.
Now see, with Bruce Campbell, I think that would have played really well. I can see him riffing off the horses talking and the dogs talking to each other. I could really see
it would have made
that
it better.
Dynamic working.
It would have made it better. I agree with you.
Oh, wait, was it Bruce Campbell or Billy Campbell was tied
Bruce
to this?
Campbell
Bruce
was,
Campbell.
Was oh, I thought it was yeah. Billy Campbell. That's why I made the joke about Rocketeer.
Oh, now that makes sense.
Billy Campbell would have been a lot. Billy Campbell would have been a lot better.
Yeah. Now that you mention it. Now, you actually, now that you say it, I was like, wait a minute, Rocketeer was Bruce Campbell and Rocketeer anyway, and then I moved on
all
from
right.
my brain.
All right.
That makes sense
well,
now.
That all makes sense.
So there's another chick in the bucket that happened early, and I just want to bring it up. It's a movie that couldn't decide if things were magic or not for different parts.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At the beginning, there's a skeleton who strangles and kills one of the Indiana Joneses.
Fun. Oh, right.
And
yeah.
It's just like out of nowhere. There's no explanation right. for why the skeletons got the job of strangling a man.
I'm assuming exactly. It's the worst booby trap ever. I mean, how do you even set that up? And it did take me out of the movie as well. And then I thought, well, maybe they're going to reveal like they used to in the serials. It was actually one of the tribesmen. And since they shot him, he was going to fall out or something and was going to get a little wink and a nod.
Yeah, that's what I wanted, actually. Right. I kind of wanted that. Like, oh, you think it's magic, but really, it's all this right. other stuff. Now, why Indiana Jones gets away with it, don't look at it, Marion. Close your eyes, Marion. I don't know why. I don't know why they get away with it and others don't. But in here, it just felt weird. And then they would do a lot of reality-based things, including the fact that he's not immortal. So that's a big fake thing that he's immortal. He's not at all. Yeah, he's just a psycho that sees his dad's ghost all the time. And then the later it's like, oh no, we're back to real magic. These skulls are floating around on their own and making blue and red beams everywhere. And
right.
like, I hate that in a movie that doesn't know how to bridge that tone.
Decide which way are you going? Are you going all magic? Are you going all reality?
Yeah. And even Spielberg and Lucas who pull it off in Indiana Jones 1. And three and two, all of them, all the first three, they pull that off. They bridge the gap between the mystical and the physical, and it feels fine. But then they do Crystal Skull, and it feels wrong.
Well, it's because they brought aliens into it.
Yeah, and so that's their screw up, right? This one is
right.
This one just doesn't even know how to do the basic thing, which is, you know, just make it feel okay in this world. Like the world doesn't work. It's a goofed up world. Ugh, I hate that. I hate that feeling of like you don't. I can't take the magic seriously, and I can't take the physical seriously, because neither one seems like they should exist in the same plane, and it bugs me. So there you go. Kari Hararuki Tewagawawa is in this. I don't know how to say his name.
Forget how you say his name. He was the narrator in the recent Overwatch short film called Dragons.
Exactly.
And
the two brothers got up on
amazing.
The hill.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He's incredible. He's the guy in Man in the High Castle, Brian, the Japanese whatever. And he was also Shang Tsung in the Mortal Kombat film.
Right.
This is more his Shang Tsung period. but yeah, even hearing him talk, and I have some of his dialogue later, you hear it and you'll go, oh, it's like, and the Dragon Brothers walked to the deal. And
oh, yeah, so good.
Anyway,
seriously, I know he's getting up there in age, but I want to write a book and have him narrate the audiobook.
The older he gets, the cooler he gets, in my opinion. I think he was the best thing about Man in the High Castle. I freaking loved him in it. I can't wait for season two.
We've previously seen Tagawa in a couple movies. Mortal Kombat comes to mind.
Yeah, Shang Tsung in there. Yeah. What else? I don't think that. I think that's it.
We haven't seen Planet of the Apes yet.
No.
The 2001.
We haven't seen that one?
No.
Not the old one? No.
Did we see a Planet of the Apes? I'm thinking.
Yeah, we've seen
did we not?
We saw Planet of the Apes. One of the Apes.
The original.
Yeah. The Marky Mark?
No.
No, we saw the one with Heston.
He was a henchman in Big Trouble in Little China. It was actually his first credit, non-credit. I kind of want to watch. He's credited in an episode of MacGyver, and I kind of want to watch that episode.
Was he down in a whale? Making noises.
I would too. Is he? So he's Is he native in Japan, or was he born here?
He's Japanese. He was born in Japan.
Okay, the name Carey always throws me off. Mm. It makes me think it's not. But then there's Harry Carey, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was one of those. His father was U.S. Army. His mother was Japanese.
Yeah. Okay, and, no, that's cool. He's awesome. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, he's cool.
We'll find this out later, but apparently he was also in the very first episode of Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation, as Mandarin Bailiff.
Yes.
Oh, right. at the court thing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, dude. Okay, I don't know why I'm going down this rabbit hole, but I want to see all things that Carey Haruki.
I know. Is Miami Vice streaming? He has two appearances on Miami Vice.
That's perfect. Some kind of Asian.
Miami Vice should always be streaming.
Asian drug runner. It should be. It should be on right now. It should be on this very second. All right. What else did I wrote here? They wanted to make this feel like the old serials and felt instead they made it feel boring and badly made. here's another. Okay, kind of a chick in the bucket, which we haven't played the. There you go. Is that no one ever mentions, except his little butler slave boy, no one really mentions
the
that
Indian?
Are you talking to nobody over there? Like, no one talks about his crazy talking to nobody thing.
When he's talking to his cab driver mentions that.
He did? Yeah. He didn't. Nobody. Just like, oh, okay.
You said, now you're talking to me? Yeah.
And then at the end, you're thinking, oh, this is perfect. Christy Swanson, she's kind of a Betty. They're together now, and they're going to hang out and be together forever on this horse with this dog and this freaking island. And I'm so excited for him. And he's got his gun, his purple suit, and whatever. And they're riding off into the sunset, but not before one more chance to talk to Ghost Dad. Like, that just sucked. It's like, mm-hmm.
That's part of the mythos. They need the closure. Plus that's the mythos of the Phantom, the generations and the prior generations talking to. It's like I said, once again, it's things that don't play well in modern cinema that they tried to force in.
Did the comic have that thing with the dad? Did the dad ghost exist in the comic book where they'd have to communicate across generations or whatever?
They wouldn't have to communicate, but there was an ancestral passing of knowledge and appearances from time to time.
Okay.
Because he's the ghost who walks, and then his dad's the ghost who hangs around, I guess.
He just reminded me of an extra from, like, the original Star Trek series or something.
You know who I love, though, was the cabbie. John Cabadice, or whoever he is. He plays a lot of little bit roles and stuff, and he just, I thought he was amazing in this.
Hmm. You better not have no money.
He's great. Yeah. He's in a lot of mobster movies, too. There were like two or three actors in this that are in like Godfather movies or The Sopranos or like a million other little, Goodfellas movies.
The Cannonball guy, by the way, is the guy we saw in Four Rooms. He was in, I think, the second room. It was the room where he had Jennifer Beals tied up.
Mm. Oh, right. That's that guy?
That's that guy, yeah.
Oh, no way.
And he was in Shawshank, too. So David Provall is the guy.
All right. Hey,
can we talk about a trope misfire? Oh, it was such a misfire.
Yeah, here you go.
Phantom gets to New York City, right? He needs a cab. He pulls a bunch of gems out of his pocket. They look like fake glass.
And, not even glass, plastic.
Yeah. Right. And it's supposed to be the trope of the guy from the jungle doesn't know how much this is all worth. Mm-hmm. But no. He's from here. He operates here. He knows exactly how much it's all worth. Mm-hmm. There's no way that he would offer this guy a handful of a fortune.
Mm-hmm. Plus, right.
He's so weird.
They want that to be fish out of water, but it wasn't, because he was in every other way. He's a native to our land.
New Yorker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the way he talked to the guy.
The New York street scenes, you guys got to admit that was some good looking stuff.
The Los Angeles street scenes in New York.
Yeah.
But
the sets, you mean? Yeah.
Well, that was definitely Universal Backlot. Then they had some sweet matte work in the back or digital something. I don't know what, but it looked good. It looked all right. I thought
there were some shots that were flat out in Los Angeles. Like, I spotted palm trees in a couple of spots.
Right.
If you want to see some of the coolest, let's make a current thing look like an old thing work that I've seen in a very long time in a movie I didn't actually like very much, but I went and saw The Good Guys with Russell Crowe freaking Ryan Gosling. And that retrofit of LA is incredible. My gosh, they do a good job. It's just like polluted to hell. way more than it is now. And, you know, because it's the 70s, and it's all just perfect. Like, I've never seen that true of a location swap in a movie that's supposed to be a little bit of a period piece. It was really, really well done. So anyway,
it is something set 40 years ago is definitely a period piece.
Yeah, I guess it is. Oh, don't. Yeah, dude. 77 is a lot further away than you remember, but it's a really, really weird effect, and they did a great job. And this was actually not bad, you know, like for 96, I wasn't pulled out of it. I thought, I actually noticed it and went, all the cars look right. Everyone's dressed the way they're supposed to.
Yeah,
those motorcycles were great with the little fenders and stuff. Oh,
yeah,
so cool, dude. There weren't very many stunts though that weren't involving motorcycles or a plane or a horse
or involving the camera turning away from the stunt. Thanks. Like so many times, I'm like, oh, he's about to jump over. Oh, what happened? I'm looking at the side of a building. Oh, okay, he's over it.
Yeah, it's. I mean,
why did this happen?
I want to be Brian Dunaway in this scenario. This is the kind of thing I want to like. I like anything in the 30s and 40s. I'm just sort of drawn to. I don't know what broke here for me. I just, you know, I'm trying to give it explanations. Like, don't watch a serious documentary before it, or you know, or whatever.
But. I definitely think this movie is not. It didn't know its target audience, and as a result, I think it was mostly just a lot of fan service to a very narrow group of people who like this kind of slow moving homage to serials and old superheroes and just.
I think it's just not mainstream enough.
Very narrow.
It doesn't mainstream it enough. Not enough people.
Not at all.
To make it. Yeah, you're probably right.
Not to justify.
Mm-mm. But there was a spate of these during this era of filmmaking. Yeah. There was a lot of like pirate
shadow
people trying to do pirate things. The Shadow's a good example, but like the what was that pirate movie that was such
with
a tank?
Gina Davis?
Yes. What was that called?
Ramshackle
Boob Switcher
pirate movie.
That was
what was that? It was like something.
The Ramshackling.
Yeah. It was like
Ramshackle Boob Switch. I don't
Cutthroat
remember.
Cutthroat Island.
There it is.
Cutthroat Island.
Ramshackle.
It's Ramshackle Island.
I like that name. But yeah, that was it was a complete bomb at the level this was, and it and that movie's a lot like this, like in terms of tone and feel and stuff. So I would highly recommend we don't watch that for Film Sack because I feel like we just watched it.
Well, let's wait a while if we're going to watch it.
Or we can do what you were just constructing as a rule, which is before we watch a movie like The Phantom or Cutthroat Island, we all have to sit and watch Troll 2 and The Room and, something by John Waters.
We got to do The Room. We have to do The Room.
We have to do The Room.
Somebody made a fake play of the game for the guy in the room for Overwatch, and it's freaking utterly fantastic. Oh, hi, Dave. Or not Dave. What does he say?
Mark. Hey, is it Mark? Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark. It's really funny.
I think if The Room ever goes streaming on Netflix, sure.
Yeah, we need to. It's required by law. I'm going to say for the record, I believe outside of other things that we've finally already seen, nothing gets more requests than The Room for this show. Personally, I get asked constantly, when are you guys going to do The Room? And I think it's because everyone knows it is the consummate garbage of all time, possibly. And I would have said that about Battlefield Earth, but if you're telling me The Room's worse than that, fine, I'll believe you.
Like way worse. Like this, like The Phantom made me enjoy Battlefield Earth more. Yeah. Like Battlefield Earth actually is kind of fun.
No, it's a piece of shit. It's a piece of shit. It's a terrible movie. Let's give it no credit. It deserves none. It's really, really bad. And by the way, reviewers who say, I don't care if you hated the Warcraft movie, reviewers, you can't compare it or call it, quote unquote, this generation's Battlefield Earth.
That's ridiculous.
There are so many things wrong with saying that. So many things wrong. First of all, what generation are you talking about?
Right.
Aren't they kind of the same? I don't know. It wasn't that long ago.
And whose generation is John Travolta today? Who is that? That was huge.
Adele Dazeem. I don't know. anyway, sorry, Randy, you were saying something.
No, you nailed it all down. Like I say, the rule seems to be that when something is bad enough, you're not going to, it's going to be even worse for you if you watch something even relatively good first.
Yeah, don't do that.
And then go into it.
Definitely don't do that. I would not recommend, it could have been anything. Like for you, it's sort of Shawshank. I know you didn't watch it right before, but For me, it was that documentary. Like, I'm not going to do that with Film Sack anymore, just generally. I'm just not going to watch something before.
Make sure you
clear the plate.
Yeah.
Right. Palate cleanser. Yeah.
Wife's out of town. I thought, you know, got to catch up on some things I haven't seen. I'll watch this. And then I watched that and I regretted it. Anyway.
I watched this with the mindset that I was sitting down. Because I've already seen The Phantom one time, so I kind of knew that I wanted to watch this on a Saturday morning. So I watched it last Saturday morning in the spirit, I guess, of what I would think would be how Mr. Winter, the director, would have seen it.
Oh, yeah, go with his friends.
Made a little bit of an intention of, lazy kind of Saturday
you'd
morning.
You've seen it before, right?
Yes, years
okay,
ago.
Okay, so but you had an idea of its quality, like the general rank.
Yes.
And so you could come in and set your mind in a particular place.
Right. Exactly. Okay.
That's a huge privilege, my friend.
Yes. I agree. I agree. Not only that, I like the idea that you approached it from a Saturday matinee kind of. I mean, that is what it is supposed to be. Now, whether they succeeded at that or did a terrible job at that, I am going to say I think it's terrible, but if they would have succeeded at that, that would have been maybe a little bit better. But that is absolutely what they were aiming for. You feel that in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like it feels like they wanted to make a love letter to that stuff and that Saturday afternoon thing.
And when was the last time that was done well? Like the Saturday matinee feel? I don't want to say it's Indiana Jones. There has to be something more recent than Indiana Jones where it's done well.
Like Tarantino's Grindhouse. I mean, it was really gory and brutal, though.
70s.
That's
though.
More 70s. Yeah. But for the 70s, yes. Like for that decade. But let's say something of the actual matinee stuff of the 30s and 40s, where you'd pay 25 cents.
Matinee hero.
TV for kids at the time.
I'd say maybe that World of Tomorrow thing. What was that?
Oh yeah, Sky Captain the World of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which we sacked here too, didn't we?
Yeah, we sacked.
We
it.
Did sack that one. Yeah.
What else?
That's a good example.
I know there's other examples of this.
Rocketeer is a good example.
Rocketeer is a great example, yeah. That one worked pretty well.
And that was around the same time, right?
Yeah. Way better execution. I don't love the Rocketeer, but I like it a whole lot more than this.
Yeah.
What else? There's other stuff. I just know it. Oh, you know what?
Movie like that. I think we're due for another... serialized hero style movie.
I would argue that Iron Giant... is a good example of a really good version of this.
Yeah.
You're right.
You know? I mean,
it's weird how they're marketing the Iron Giant. It's like, come back. Have you seen like the advertisements for the Blu-ray? And it's just like,
people love it.
It's like this whole generation's about to be introduced to the Iron Giant.
Well, they should be, because there's a whole generation of people who know it's genius and its time in the theater was not kind to it. And now it's like, this is like a true classic that was, how do you put it? Like, it just didn't do well in the theater, and usually that means it sucked, but that's not what happened here. It was just people just didn't know, or it was poorly marketed or whatever, but man, what a brilliant movie that is.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Loved it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, Brian,
don't
I think Dunaway's right.
This.
Or Ibbot's right. I think that they were probably due for somebody else's take on this. Wasn't John Carter from Mars or whatever, wasn't that supposed to be this sort of thing?
Edgar Rice Burroughs.
They took it too seriously. I mean, they tried to make it like a modern day style action epic kind of thing, instead of like really paying homage to the style of the original source material. That was just a book, though, right? Or was there ever a John Carter?
There was comic books. Yeah.
Comic books. Like, books.
I don't
there was both.
Any series.
Yeah, there was as far as I know, like the Alan Quartermain stuff had movies, right? Back in the day.
I don't know. I can't remember now.
But that would be an all right thing to dig up again. I'd be cool with that.
Oh, you'd be perfect for this, right? Was that Tom Selleck? No, was it Tom Selleck who was Alan Quartermain?
No. Nobody that big.
Hold on. Why does that sound right to me? That sounds right for some reason, but maybe I'm thinking of
You're thinking of Quickly Down Under.
The Lost City of Gold or something like that. Alan Quartermain and The Lost City of Gold. Or am I thinking of two different things?
It was 86's Alan Quartermain and The Lost City of Gold. Then there was Alan Sean Quartermain Connery? And The Temple of Skulls, and that was in 08. Oh my gosh,
Richard
they really made an Alan Quartermain thing called The Temple of Skulls.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
Yes. You cannot
believe
that.
Wow. Oh, Richard Chamberlain.
It was Yeah, Richard Chamberlain was
Chamberlain. That's right. Okay,
he's the one that he had a samurai Pete on his back in Shogun. Do you guys remember that?
Right. Yes,
he got Pete on. I'll never forget it.
In a prison thing. Yeah,
yeah. It's all I remember about that. That entire you have to let me go down this road. I have three memories from Shogun. Memory number one, he's in a prison pit or something with a bunch of Japanese guys, and someone barfs next to him. I remember that. Number two, he's up on top trying to make sense of stuff, and the samurai lord man, whatever, throws him on the ground on his face, whips out his doodle and pees on him. So that's number two. And then third thing I remember about that movie, it's the only other thing I remember, is I was in Los Angeles with my dad. We were driving cars back from a car auction back to Salt Lake City, and we stayed in this terrible hotel. I think I may have told you guys this story. And he wanted to watch a baseball game that was on one channel at this hotel, and on the other channel, Shogun, and in between them was a hardcore porn channel. And the only way he could do it was he would hit the remote really fast, go whap, whap, and he'd go past, and all I would see as I was like 16, I would see like this flash of flesh. And then it would be the other thing.
Flash of flesh.
And then it would be the other thing. So then what happened, though, is about halfway through the game or halfway through Shogun, however you want to look at it, the remote quit working.
Oh, no.
And just happened to stop working.
Worst case scenario.
On the mid channel, the middle channel. And I've never seen my dad panic like that in my life, where he was like, oh, my gosh, up, dip. He's like throwing clothes at the TV and like leaping out of the bed. And it was a remote that was nailed to the table because you were in that hotel. It was that kind of hotel. Right. And so you couldn't do much to fix it. And there was no like manual controls on the TV, and the TV is like bolted into the thing. I think he ended up yanking the cord out, which wasn't even like a normal cord. Anyway, it was great. So there's my Shogun memories. Thanks, Richard Chamberlain. Good job.
That's awesome.
Great. Right. Hmm. Richard Chamberlain. And in this Alan Quartermain movie, Robert Donner, who played... What is his name in Mork and Mindy? He plays the
oh, Exidor?
Yeah, Exidor.
Yeah.
He plays a character called Shawarma. And I would have never gotten I would have never even connected those things back then.
How did
we need to see King Solomon's Mines? I think that was the one that I was trying to think of, not Alan Quartermain and Lost City Gold, but right. King Solomon's Mines was the one that I remember.
So does the 08 one the 08 one was like a direct to video thing. Does anyone know if that was any good? Like the Temple of the Souls.
Why would that we know?
I don't know. I feel like I kind of want something like this. Like I want some swashbuckly. Maybe I just want a good Indiana Jones movie and no more Harrison Ford dragouts or something. Maybe that's all I want. But yeah, I mean, let's see. Why is it called Temple of the Skulls? Horrible piece of garbage. Okay, never mind. The reviews are bad.
Yeah, it's got a 2.8 on IMDb. Yikes,
that's not good. All right,
no.
Although maybe it'd be fun for us. We'll see. All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, I think we'll do some clips. Hello, party people. Do you sleep in a bed? I do. Seems like part of human nature these days to sleep in a bed. I've got good news for you, because since you sleep in a bed, you'll be happy to hear that this episode's brought to you by Casper. They're the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price you'd pay at some showroom. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting costs of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly on to you, Mr. or Mrs. Customer. Casper combines two technologies, springy latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create an award-winning surface that's just the right amount of sink and the right amount of bounce. I can confirm. Free shipping returns to the U.S. and Canada. They sent me one to try it. I had 100 days to try it out. And guess what? I liked it enough and I kept it. Use the code FILMSACK at checkout for $50 towards that mattress purchase. That's $50 off with the code FILMSACK at casper.com/FILMSACK. And use that code. Okay? Take advantage of us and this deal. It's a really good one. Terms and conditions apply. That's casper.com/filmsack and the code FILMSACK. Let's do some clips. I have a number of them.
Clips.
And there's the bridge guy. Or there's this guy. It's the Too Fast, Too Furious guy. Here you go.
We never crossed no damn bridge.
Yeah, that's him. So I just wanted to get you familiar with him. There's a moron in the car.
Turn the map around. You got it upside down, you big moron.
That's great.
Wouldn't like the names of things be upside down if you had the map upside down?
It should be.
Drawing is hieroglyphics and stuff. Right?
Also, was moron a common thing in like 31? Is that a thing you'd call somebody?
Again, why are you asking us?
I don't know. dear internet. Did people say moron in 1931?
Origin of moron.
Yeah.
See,
check the dates on that, Brian.
Well, yeah, there's a website expired. That will tell you like the popularity of some terms and words, right?
Yeah,
like, when over the years.
Sure, and when they peaked or when they started.
Yeah, it's a Greek word from moros, and I don't know. We'll see. I'm just making up crap on this.
Oh, that was so believable.
Yeah,
it actually is.
Had me convinced. Like the actual internet, you've lied to me, and I believed it. It's fine.
Origin of use moron was coined in 1910 by psychologist Henry H. Goddard.
Oh, he's a real dick then.
Right, so
my patient's a moron. Wow. All right.
It's to mean dull.
Okay. Dull and slow. Got it. Here's what? Well, there's this.
He's dead. Damn thing came alive and choked him to death.
Okay, that's some good acting right there. The Phantom speaks.
Watch him, devil. He moves. Eat him.
Yeah, okay. Eat him, devil.
oh, wow. Here we go. So Ngram Viewer is the thing on Google, right? And you put in moron, it actually reaches its peak. The highest point at which the word moron was used was 1925.
Oh, really?
Wow. That's cool.
Weird.
Yeah.
Man.
Okay. All right. I've learned
something. Walking down the streets of 20.
Love that tool.
That is fun.
That's super cool. All right. Ibbot. Okay. This is when Ibbot's date asked him for some jewelry.
Oh.
On one of their dates. Okay, so this is Ibbot asking his date from high school. We have all this old footage. I just have to play it on the show occasionally. This is when Ibbot's date asked for some jewelry.
One made of gold, one made of silver, one made of jade.
Wow, she was real picky about what she wanted and had a low voice. Yeah. I'm surprised how low her voice was. For
broke with that one.
Yeah,
I think the Ibbot's prom date joke has established that Ibbot went to the prom with a guy.
Yeah, and went to prom 50 times in a row somehow.
I was going to say, I think I went to prom with everybody.
With every guy, yeah.
With every guy.
Something about skulls.
When placed together, the three skulls harness an energy 1,000 times greater than any force or high explosive known to man.
Bleh. Bleh. Again, it's just something about him in the 90s. I just don't like him, but I love him now. Can't put my finger on it. All right, here's pretty what? Oh, okay.
Gosh, you're pretty in those woodsy flannels.
You're so pretty in those. But then once again, it's like, you're so pretty in those woodsy flannels.
Play it again. I'm not absolutely certain of the last two words.
Gosh, you're pretty in those woodsy flannels.
Woodsy flannels.
Flannels. Yeah.
Which
I'm
not
so sure that's what he said. It's because it's just bad sound.
It's horrible.
It's funny. I remember watching it. I remember him saying that because I put that in my show notes. I don't remember having any issues with audio. And I was surprised you guys said
it was just a lot of Doppler effect, like
right,
like that.
We can only afford one boom mic.
That's right.
You could detect a thunderstorm with this dialogue.
That's right. Here's bad gangster moment.
Yeah, a little tootsie is boarding the plane right now. Just say the word, I'll have it dragged off by the hair.
All right, the little tootsie is on the plane.
Little
right now.
Tootsie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, everybody's focusing on Tootsie because we're not certain that's what he actually said at that instant. Mm-hmm. Like, dragged off the plane by the air, at least we kind of, like we all got it, you know, and I'm telling you, the subtitling helped so much.
Christy Swanson, she was a big-time, like, Playboy lady, right, or something? What was her deal? She was she was an actress, but wasn't she always naked all the time or something?
No.
I thought she was.
Christy Swanson? No.
I thought she had a spread in Playboy, I want to say. I remember all this. It was controversial at the time.
You she remember
had a spread
all
spread on that sandwich.
I just
I remember her from The Chase. I remember her from Buffy. I remember her from a movie I wish was streaming called Deadly Friend.
Mm.
Where she plays a girl next door who gets killed, and then the guy who lives next door who falls in love with her makes her into a robot.
Mm.
Or dead corpse.
This movie I want to see. What was it called again?
It's called Deadly Friend, and I wish it was streaming. It would be a perfect film sack film if it was streaming.
I looked it up. She was indeed
She was on the cover of Playboy, and she was the centerfold in 2002.
Yep, there it is. I knew it. I don't know why.
Scott Johnson knows his porn.
I did not.
She got the job during the film of this movie, which was at the Hefner Mansion.
That's right. Maybe that was where it happened. Maybe they just two birds with one stone or something. I don't know. All right. What else are we here?
Someone's throwing a blanket over Scott's screen right now.
Exactly. Right now, yeah.
Here's you know when the guy got his eyes poked out? I recorded that. So here's that. There you go. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
There were blades. So people know if they didn't see the movie, there are blades inside each of the microscope eye holes, which doesn't make any sense because if you're looking in there, you would see the blades.
Like, right. You'd see springs and you'd see the metallic thing. You would not see the word liar. You'd see.
Yeah, it's complete garbage. It's dumb.
It frustrates me because scientists don't just look into any scope that you tell them, you just put out a microscope and it's like a scientist rat trap or something.
How smart do you think scientists were during the 30s? Come on.
They thought everything was,
I used to be a chemist professionally. I was my job. I worked in a chemistry lab. And if someone came along, yes, I'm very old. If someone came along and said, look in that microscope, I would first look at that microscope.
Right.
There's no way I would just put my eyes
on
it.
Hey, man, you're post JFK, man. We don't trust anybody now.
And is that a thing?
We were stupid.
Is that a thing you can just keep using and get away with keep using it, right?
No one would hear about the guy who's blinding and killing people with a microscope.
Oh, Wilson, come clean up the blood from the latest victim of my eye trick. We've got another one coming later. All right, here's no smoking in the skull cave.
No smoking in the skull cave.
He literally said what I said.
No smoking in the skull cave.
Great. No smoking, baby.
Yeah, you can smoke in the other cave. No smoking in the skull cave.
Please stay within the purple ropes.
No smoking in the skull cave.
It's not. It really isn't a rope. It's a bodysuit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't hide a boner in that phantom costume.
Nope.
You can't even hide a nipple erection in that thing.
You can't hide anything in it.
No.
I'm not going to say it because it's gross. All right, here's something about toothpaste.
Toothpaste? Really? That's nice.
I don't remember what that was about.
Because the first skull gets back from Thailand and it looks okay. And she just offers up that she polished it with toothpaste and Treat Williams gives her the side eye as anyone would. But then the line is ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, now I remember, because it was the skull. Yeah. That was before it started floating and then burned him up, which I really enjoyed.
Right.
Here he is hamming it up.
I am in such a good mood right now, I almost hate to mention this.
I'm pretty sure the reason Treat Williams didn't achieve superstar status is because he has the voice of my Aunt Susan. He's a good-looking guy. He's got all the charm in the world, but he talks like this.
He has the voice of McLovin from, I don't know, from How to Train Your Dragon or something. It's weird.
McLovin is not in that movie.
Yes, he is. Absolutely. He's one of the kids in How to Train Your Dragon.
I don't think he's in that. Are you sure?
Yeah.
McLovin from Superbad.
Superbad voices one of the other kids in How to Train Your Dragon.
Not the main kid, obviously, but one of the other kids. Correct. You're sure about that?
Reminds me of Crispin Glover.
I can hear that totally now. Yeah.
But do you think getting in trouble talking? Because I'm pretty sure he was wearing some top cap dentures, kind of like for the role.
Oh.
Because I think he was wearing some teeth wear.
Like the Matt Dillon teeth from Something About Mary kind of thing.
It was really the same teeth. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Christopher Mintz Plasse, who is McLovin, played Fish Legs. I don't remember that at all. I remember Jonah Hill. I love how if
Scott doesn't believe something, you know he's off Googling it while the rest of us are talking about whatever.
Well, I have to. You gotta figure it out. That's a great movie, by the way. I cannot believe it came out in 2010. That's weird.
Yeah.
All right. It seems like so long ago now. What am I doing? Oh, more clips. Okay, we got this one here. Some bad acting. No, wait. Something about the skulls. Did I already do that?
It's an ancient silver skull with precious stones where the eyes should be.
Okay, great. Here's the bad acting. If that wasn't bad acting enough for you, here's some more.
How did you... I mean, who told you that?
I did.
Yeah. Blech.
I did.
Blech.
Yeah.
Blech. Here's some more bad acting.
What?
I saw him with my own eyes.
Alert your officers. Tell them there's a madman on the loose. He's armed and extremely dangerous. Shoot on sight.
Don't worry about a thing. I'll take care of it.
Blech. Blech.
Who says, does anybody say, I saw it with my own eyes? Anybody ever say that? I mean, I'd say, oh, I saw it myself.
Nope, I'd never say
I saw it with my own eyes.
With my own eyes.
When saw it with my friend's eyes.
Well, why wouldn't, okay, how come Darth Vader, a.k.a. shriveled up Anakin Skywalker with a harmonica in his mouth, why did he say, let me look upon you with my own eyes?
Right.
Couldn't he have said,
and he sounds like,
let me look upon you. That's all he needs to say.
Let me look upon you with my own eyes. Could have been Sean
Why
Connery.
Does Sean Connery help?
Can you help me find my car keys?
I can't find my car keys.
You know, there was an eye theme in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding.
Mm-hmm. Randy agreed.
Yes, well, there was.
What does the water mean?
Yeah, what does the water mean?
There was an eye thing in this movie. It was a constant eye thing in this movie. The skulls had gems for eyes, and your eyes poked out if you looked through the microscope.
All the actors had eyes. It was crazy.
Well, no, but for example, Billy Zane's character's disguise was his eyes were painted black. Like that, for some reason, that, you know, Clark Kented him. Mm-hmm. Again, which drove me freaking crazy.
Yeah, I hate that.
Especially because it was the climax of it was about the climax of the film. Like, ultimately, we somehow get to the end of the film, and yeah, she knows he is who he is, but she wants proof. Mm-hmm. You know, like you don't need proof. He's just got eye makeup on. Like, what?
And by the way, whoever said earlier
you have
that
the same boring voice as my friend Kip Walker.
By the way, anybody who was wondering, somebody earlier in the show today was saying that Christy Swanson didn't go on to do anything else or something. She is busy, man. She's working today.
Oh, I know. She is, yeah. I made that joke, and I'm surprised. Stuff. I saw the photo. Her IMDb photo is badass, first of all.
Yeah, totally. It's on a
motorcycle. Because I want to say she's on Sons of Anarchy or something, but but yeah, no, like five things last year and a few things the year before that, something in post-production right now.
Yeah, and she's our age. And looking great.
Yeah.
Take that, other people our age.
take that, us.
Here is the, let's hear the dragons, the Overwatch dragons guy again.
Now let me see. When was the last time we had visitors here below the ocean surface, deep in the bowels of this uncharted volcanic island?
The other brother, the Monkey King, blew away.
Seriously, I think Hawaii Five-O is streaming on Netflix or Hulu Plus. He has a character in two episodes of the first season of Hawaii Five-O. I'm gonna go watch those episodes.
That show is like, it'd be worth it to see those episodes, but that show sucks.
It's so bad. It's good, Scott.
Is it though? Is it?
Yes.
All right. Here's that fire sound again. They used it twice. I only captured one because the other one's a little bit undiscernible. But this one is, you'll hear it. It's that fire sound I always bring up. It's ever since I saw Backdraft, like 100 movies use it. It's like the Wilhelm scream of fire noises. Mm-hmm. And here it is. Hear it on the end there? The I hate it. It takes me out of your film. Whoever uses it takes me out of your
I hate the generic animal sounds. Like a horse whinnying always sounds the same and every time it happens.
Every bear sounds the same. Even in Warcraft.
Every bear, every lion.
Yep, it's the same bear every time. If you have a bear pet
in
Warcraft,
really
you're going
to
hear it.
It's really hard to get those guys to perform.
It's hard to get a savage bear to roar it right every time. And then and they tear the
boots off. That tiger looked like it was really about to eat Billy Zane.
That tiger was amazing and made me wish that the tiger was a sidekick instead of that weak wolf that he had, because that wolf was, I mean, all the actors had to pretend like they were afraid of it, but it was like the most docile wolf you could find.
It didn't even
anywhere.
Look like a wolf. It was small. It looked like a mutt from a humane society. It did not look like a wolf.
Now, that's one of the things I actually think is forgivable. I think the problem is everybody's seen Game of Thrones now. And I think the wolf was pretty good. Like, again, I wanted more of the animals.
Yeah, the Game of Thrones wolves have not helped the lesser wolves of Hollywood.
Right.
They've really made it hard to get a job out there, those poor guys. And then Warcraft's not going to help either. You got giant 10-foot orcs riding huge wolves, and that's going to be bad. All right, here's time for this deal here.
I
Why, it's the film sack checklist. 12 people that resemble Indiana Jones? Check. Ghost dad? Check. Purple guy who should never be on a horse or use a gun? Check. We got Star Trek connections as well. Bunch of them. Yeah. I'll just do the important ones here. There's some actors and stuff. Samantha Edgar, she played Lily Palmer. She was on TNG. Leon Russin, who played Mayor Krebs, was in Star Trek VI. Someone named Bill, which is pretty great. Kari Harukati Tawagawa was great Cabal Sang in TNG. He was the Mandrum Bailiff, as we talked about in Encounter at Farpoint. Bill Smitrovich was Uncle Dave Palmer in DS9. He played a dude. And in Bernard Cates was Falkmore the Butler in TNG, played Sigmund Freud in the episode Phantasm.
Interesting. You know, it's kind of interesting. You can kind of tell a movie is not quite D-list movie because it's got a lot of Trek connections, but it's not quite A-list movie because there's usually very few in those. But it's not quite down to D level where it's no Trek connection as well.
It's a weird gauge, isn't it? Like, yeah. You can actually gauge it that way.
This is a movie that clearly before it was made, before the people actually saw it, they thought more highly of it than it ended up being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because we were off the tails of like Batman, right? And we're looking for something that's going to be good. What year was Batman and Robin?
90, around the same time, right? 97, 98, 99, mm-hmm. something like that.
The mask reminded me very much of Robin's little mask.
Mm-hmm.
Oh
yeah, that puffed out texture. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Something you could print on a 3D printer.
Yeah,
maybe. Perhaps.
Are you asking?
I'm just saying.
Brian's always got some cool project printing, so have him do it.
That's right.
I'd give the soundtrack grade an F for fine. It was fine.
Yeah,
it was good. Right.
It wasn't terrible. It was just there. It did its job.
I had hopes at the very beginning. I had hopes. Oh, I'm about to discover a really cool score. No, not really.
No. It fizzles out a little. And like the beginning in general, the beginning is the best part of the movie. Randy's totally right about that. Like there's the tone, the energy, everything feels real good.
Don't confuse it with the very, very beginning, which is the, you know, 5 minutes of him.
No, that's terrible.
Describing. Killing the dad.
Yeah,
and
that's terrible.
The beach.
That's awful.
And then the tribe's giving him the ring. It's like, whoosh, whoosh, why are you giving the guy who shows up? Mm-hmm. White man's got to save us. Mm-hmm. Here's the ring.
That's a nice trope, okay. Isn't it?
We haven't talked about the worst detail in the film. So we find out where to go when a laser beam cuts a big swath across a map.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes.
The swath is 600 miles long.
Yeah.
How in the world does that tell us where to go?
It doesn't.
Oh, man. They find that island like lickety split, too, man. It's just like secret island, can't see it. Oh, there it is.
See, once again, Indiana Jones did it better. He had the staff and he had the thing in the first movie and he went down in that tomb and the light shone right on the actual crypt spot. Like
right,
that's there's some granularity there. But when you're like a giant world map and you create a burn hole the size of Britain, dumbasses, it's like a
Gucci. So of course, there's a map on the wall. So the skulls have to be smart enough to know not only that there's going to be a map there.
Yeah.
So I was curious how they're supposed to show that unless the map is a bundled package with the skulls or something. Yeah. I didn't get that part.
It's because it sucks. Here's the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
The Phantom. Zane Swanson treat. Zeta Jones Ramar. Dad bum. Bad. Dumb. Boring. Weird. Amateur. Bizarre. Seriously, this Phantom was a menace.
Phantom Menace. Oh, I can't believe
that's all that. That was great.
First time anyone's made a Phantom Menace joke. I'm shocked. Mm. Next up, Brian Dunaway.
The Phantom. For those who came in late, you win. Now go home. Nothing to see here but purple spandex wiener and nipple erections. Thanks, Randy, for my new thing to say. Nipple erections.
Nipple erections. Pretty good.
Damn it, Dunaway, you did it so much better than I'm going to do it.
Oh, sweet. All right, then finally, let's round it out with the lesser version of whatever Dunaway did. Brian Ibbett. Brian Ibbett.
The Phantom. Sorry, I came in late. What'd I miss?
It's pretty good.
It's not bad, actually. It's pretty good. All right, in that vein, I have an alternate title. These are secretly handed to me via some secret Hollywood deal. And they say the two titles almost used for the movie were... How did you fit all of that luxurious hair under that purple head thing? Or purple package? I think purple package is what we should do.
The purple package.
The purple package. We have an email. Actually, it's a phone call from someone who wants to talk to us about Star Wars and product placement. So here you go.
Hello, Film Sackers. This is Patrick in Conrad, Montana. I finally got to listen to the Force Awakens episode, and I really enjoyed it, but I don't think you mentioned all the product placement. Mostly all the Botox in Leia's face. Thanks, and keep up the good work.
Oh, zing, shots fired.
This person made a voice memo and sent it to us specifically to make fun of Carrie Fisher's face.
Yep.
I want you to think about the quality of your life at this point. Seriously.
Well, it's, you know, it's Montana. But I but I get the but I take his point because as I recall, we were talking about how there's never any product placement in Star Wars movies because you can't do
true,
it.
True. Right.
And we were trying to think in places where maybe, I mean, obviously
and
the obvious
galaxy far, far away Reese pieces
brought to you by Chrysler.
but the obvious thing is that everything in that movie is intended to become a toy or something and sell to you.
Right. Right. Yes, we talked about Brian Dunaway brought up C-3PO's red arm was the ultimate product placement.
Yeah, that was the whole conversation. So within that context, and had it been had we played the call earlier, it would have probably seemed less mean toward Carrie Fisher. So I'm fine with it. It's fine.
I actually would like to encourage people. You know, now that it's out on Blu-ray, if you didn't see Phantom Menace back in December, like the rest of the world. And you've watched it recently, maybe go listen to that episode of Film Sack. Maybe now, right. maybe you didn't even know that we had an episode of Film Sack on Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Force Awakens, Friends.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Force Awakens.
So we have a note here.
You
from
watched
one,
the Phantom. One, get it on your head.
one other fan wrote in named Daniel who wanted us to know that we really need to get around to seeing The Burbs. And I think we've talked about The Burbs before. Yes. I know Dunaway's a giant fan, and there's no reason why we shouldn't see The Burbs except we'd like it to stream. This leads me into another issue, which is sometimes you guys will send us DVDs and stuff, and usually what'll happen is they'll get distributed to all four of us, and then we'll kind of forget we have them, and they'll sort of sit there, and then one day we'll go, oh shoot, we really should watch one of these, and then we'll watch one, and then we'll kind of forget we have them for a while. It's sort of like a weird deal. So anyone out there who has sent us stuff, it is our intention to get to them at some point, somehow. There's one guy who says he's not going to listen to us anymore because we never watched
really?
Yeah, I think he's still listening. I don't know, I could be wrong. If you are listening, I still fully intend to for us to see that or to, you know.
Which one was it? You remember what it was?
Cabin in the Woods, I think.
Cabin in the Woods, yes.
Yeah.
I think that guy, I did watch it, and I thanked him personally through an email, and I would love for us to do it for Film Sack.
I agree. We should totally do it. I don't think you need to quit the show, though, for that. Because he kept saying how much he loves everything about the show, but he can't do it anymore because of this one movie. So I don't think you should rage quit based on that. However, if any of you have done that and you're like, man, they never let's watch my movie. I'm ticked. And it cost me $12 or whatever. Just let me know. I'll either refund your money or we'll get to your thing. I just wanted to, this is a little PSA here at the end of the show.
I am absolutely certain that we have received films and we have the best intention of watching them and we don't remember that we've got them.
Absolutely true. I have so much crap stacked over here. It's just ridiculous. So,
you know, like I moved back in February. I have no idea what happened. So much of my life is still in boxes in my garage. So
we really need someone who just produces that part that just goes, you guys do the thing you do, and then I'm going to occasionally push this in your face.
Yeah, it's maybe we will do that. Maybe what we do from now on is send single copies to some intern who will then rip them and give us all digital versions or something. I don't know, but like The Last Dragon I'm looking at right here, I don't even remember who sent us this, but at some point, you know, we need to watch it. So
yeah, then we got Firefox. Did we get Logan's Run or am I?
Did we get Firefox? I want Logan's Run.
We did get Firefox.
I don't think we got Logan's Run that I know.
Maybe we didn't get Logan's Run though.
And then what was the recent one that someone got four copies of?
No, he said he was, Magic Mike. And he said,
oh, yeah, that was a joke, yeah.
He said he was just kidding. And I was like, oh, thank God.
He better be, because I actually watched part of that while I was in Mexico. That movie's not for me. It's not for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's for people who are really into dudes. And
this episode, if we put titles like that, this episode would be called Scott Johnson Knows His Porn.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no. And I, well, look, all I know is Christy Swanson still kicking it. Good job, Dave. All right, so that's that. Thank you for your email and calls and all that stuff. You can leave those voicemails at 801-471-0462 or send us emails at filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie, our next thing is not a movie. It's a TOS live commentary track.
We're going to watch Star Trek.
The Naked Time, right?
Yep,
Time. This is when Sulu jumping around with a sword and his shirt off.
Time to get naked.
What else is notable about that episode? Is it, I know that's the most.
Oh,
famous.
The Spock pimp slap when Kirk slaps Spock and then Spock just
slaps the hell out of Kirk. Yeah, it's real good. So we're gonna watch that, do a live commentary track. Why? Because there's some people out of town next week, so we're gonna have this as a little supplementary thing. If you're out of town next week, you'll know why, because you're with us watching the Warcraft movie here in Salt Lake City. So if that's you, come up and say hi to me and Brian Ibbett and Tom Merritt.
And the episode after that, we're going to be talking about Warcraft. I don't know if it's going to be the whole episode, if we're going to do a Warcraft episode. But the episode after that, we're going to talk about Warcraft, I promise you. So go see that movie.
Yeah, it'll come up. And I can tell you this, having heard a ton about the story. We did a full spoiler episode on the instance yesterday, not having seen the movie myself, but kind of knowing the plot and knowing what my gamer friends think. They're loving it. Everyone who plays Warcraft loves this game. You can call that bias if you want. You can call that a thousand other things, but I would take their opinion over that of some stuffy Boston newspaper poohead is all I'm saying. Who compares it to Battlefield Earth of all things.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, man. All right, that's going to do it. Filmsack.com is the website. You guys know it. You love it. Go there. Be there. All the links are there. And you can also find us on Twitter @FilmSack. Leave us reviews on iTunes or wherever you find your podcast. It helps us way more than you know. That's going to do it for us. For me.
My
brain wouldn't let me stop saying me. That's really weird. For me, for Brian, and for Randy, we'll see you next time.
The Phantom doesn't end podcasts.
We do. Whatever that means. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com. Excellente.